Hello, folks, and welcome to the Keep or Cut podcast, a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm Pete Ball, joined as always by Chad Young. And Chad, today is finally it. I feel like we've been counting this down for, like, I don't know, 75 weeks, but it is episode 100.
For 75 weeks. It's like we got to episode 25 and we're like, we could get to 100 someday.
Just keep pushing. We made it, man. We made it to 100. It's been 100 episodes of fun. Thank you to our listeners who've helped us make it this far. And Chad, we're going to do something kind of crazy today.
I think we had a couple of crazy ideas. We really wanted to, you know, celebrate 100. I think that my favorite crazy idea was, let's come up with 100 takes. And I was just like, just fire off every 30 seconds some like completely indefensible position or something. But I think
where we ended up, those takes would have been hilarious. Yeah. Towards the end anyway.
It wouldn't have worked. But I like where we're going. I think you came up with a better plan, and I think this is a better plan. So
so what we're going to try to do, and in a way, I guess it would be 100 takes, kind of, is we're going to try to touch upon in some way, shape, or form. It might just be like, this player was in a trade that I did. It could be that small, or it could be, you know, what do you think of this individual player? But we are going to try to touch upon 100 players today to commemorate our massive 100 episode. So Chad, without wasting any time, I'm ready to jump right in. If you are, we're gonna do this kind of rapid fire style to make sure we get upon all the stuff we have in our notes. So first big piece of news. Julio Urias and Dustin May both headed to the IL. Urias, I believe, is hamstring. Dustin May is an arm situation, so that's a little bit concerning. Bobby Miller has been called up. Really exciting stuff. I remember watching Bobby Miller in the Futures game last year. He looked kind of nasty. And Gavin Stone is set to make a start this week. He wasn't too great in his debut. So, Chad, let's just start with Dustin May here. Are you getting concerned? Are you selling him in your long-term leagues? What do you think of Dustin May as he heads to the IL again?
Yeah, I mean, I think May, it's just, he's always had stuff that you're like, wow, he's gonna pile up strikeouts someday. And now we are, it seems crazy. He made his major league debut in 2019. This is his fifth season in the majors. I think of him as like a kid. He is not a kid. He's 25. He's not old, but he's 25. He's been around since he was, you know, 20, 21. And those strikeouts are just, they're not coming. And I think at this point, you just have to accept that they're not coming. And he isn't a bad pitcher. I mean, you look at his numbers this year, he's made 9 starts. He's a 2.63 ERA, 3.28 FIP. The XFIP is a little questionable. He's gotten some home run per fly ball luck, only a 2.1% home run per fly ball rate. That is not sustainable. But I think I have sort of given up on the idea that he's going to develop into a true ace, striking out more than a hitter per inning and posting sort of low threes ERAs. I think he's going to be more like a high threes ERA guy. He's not going to get you a ton of strikeouts. That's not a bad pitcher. But, you know, in a long-term league, I think if you can still sell the vision of Dustin May, you should.
Yeah, I do not disagree. I think at this point in his career, he's a lot of innings into his career. Like you said, he's been around the block despite being only 25 years old. And that K per nine is down around 8, right? The strikeout promises he started to show late towards last season, if I recall correctly, have vanished this season. So I'm with you on Dustin May. I am a little bit excited. I think you probably agree. We can kind of skip over Julio Urias. I mean, he's going to come back when he's healthy. It's not an arm
we
issue.
We said his name. We said his name, and that's what counts.
I've already notched his name over here on my little envelope that I'm keeping track on. but this has given an opportunity to two exciting prospects, especially Bobby Miller. So who are you rushing to pick up? Is it Miller? Is it Stone? Where are you with these two guys?
Neither. I'm the low man, I guess, on Miller, but I've been poking around because there's a bunch of excitement in the Auto News Slack about Miller getting called up. And so I've been like trying to figure out what I'm missing. Because here's what I see when I look at Bobby Miller. In 2021, in high A, as a 22-year-old, so not a particularly young high A pitcher, but in high A, he was really good. Struck out a bunch of guys, didn't walk very many, good results. 2021, again, is a 22-year-old. He gets challenged with double A. He only gets 9 innings. They're not very good, but whatever. It's 9 innings. Fine. And actually, they weren't bad. It was just some bad luck in there. Last year, first real shot at double A, and he was mediocre, mid-threes FIP, mid-fours ERA, a lot of walks, more home runs than you'd like to see. Gets his first taste of triple A, and the ERA is pretty good, 3.38, but the FIP is 4.65. There's more walks again. Home runs still a little bit of an issue. This year in triple A, he's been atrocious. Now, he's been injured, and so he's been working his way back, and you know, someone pointed out to me these are basically like spring training innings, and he did finally make a good start. He made one good start his last time out. That was just a few days ago. Went 6 innings, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk, no home runs, run on 2 hits. Beautiful. Other than that start, I look at his track record and like, I hear things like he has an overpowering fastball. I hear things like he can dominate hitters. He can go deep into games, blah, 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 blah. And then I look at the numbers and I'm like, why isn't he succeeding? Like if he can overpower hitters with his fastball, if he's going to overpower major league hitters with his fastball, why isn't he overpowering minor league hitters with his fastball? Like, and it's just no evidence that that's what's been happening with him. And so I'm dubious. I'll be wrong, right? He'll end up being great and I won't have any shares of him and that's fine. I will live with that. But I am, maybe there's some leagues where I'll put in some bids on him if but I'm going to bid low and I'm going to bid on him as a flyer who I think I'm not expecting a lot from. Now, I think the thing that he and Stone both have in their favor is that right now the Dodgers have a mess in their rotation, right? They've got two guys injured. They are still using Noah Syndergaard, who is probably at some point a DFA candidate, I would think. Like if these guys stick, like if Stone and Miller are good and then they get healthy, like they can make room to keep these guys around. So that is an advantage, is that the Dodgers, like they have a lot of pitching depth, but they don't have like 5 guys you have to have in the rotation. And so these guys can stick around, but I don't know. I look at Miller, I see that issue. When I look at Stone, the issue is really walks, and like that's not getting better. He walked 3 and 4 in his last 2 minor league starts. He's consistently walked too many guys in the minors, and it's only gotten worse this year. And so like, I don't know. I look at these 2 guys and I'm like, I think Stone's going to walk a bunch of guys and get himself into trouble. I think he will pile up the strikeouts. He has done a good job getting strikeouts in the minors. Not this year, but historically, but I think he's going to be pretty hittable based on what we've seen from him in the minors.
Totally fair. I'm definitely with you on Stone. I guess though, he has not shown good command. He was in his limited taste. He wasn't really getting any swings and misses or anything. It's only 4 innings, but he looked pretty brutal. The one thing that'll keep me coming back to any of these players are that they wear Dodger blue, and that the Dodgers just seem to be a factory for starting pitchers, and they seem to bring them along well. And so I'll give these guys some leash. I'm interested in Bobby Miller more than Stone, but totally fair. You snuck Syndergaard in there, so we are up to 5 names, just 95 more to go. We are 8 minutes in. Here we go. Next up on the list, Jorge Polanco went to the IL. I believe that's hamstring as well. I've been looking at so much news, I should have just wrote it down. That resulted in the calling up of Edouard Julien, a Chad Young favorite. Is it a short stint? Is he here to stay? Because Royce Lewis is lighting the minor leagues on fire, and Jorge Polanco will probably be back reasonably soon. They're a crowded team, those Twins.
I know. Yeah, it is a hamstring issue for him. It doesn't sound like it will be super long, but hamstrings are hamstrings. You never know. Julien, I mean, everyone's talking about Royce Lewis, which makes sense, right? He's just making his way back from the serious injury. He was super fun in the majors last year. I mean, Julien has been awesome. Like his AAA numbers this year, he has a 4.19 wOBA in AAA right now. Like he is walking almost 20% of the time in AAA. He's striking out 24.6% of the time, which is more than you'd like, but he's hitting for decent power. He's just sort of doing the things you want him to do. And I think they're going to be in an interesting situation because Julien has earned a real look. And I know people say, oh, he was up before. He was up before. He played in 9 games and got 32 plate appearances. Like, I don't think he's gotten a real look yet, and I think he's earned it. And I think they're going to have to figure out what to do about him and Lewis. And when Lewis is ready, he's also earned a real look. So you've got some difficult choices for the Twins to make. And I don't know how you make more room here right now. Like right now, Kyle Farmer's their third baseman. It feels like Lewis or Julien could maybe take a shot at third base. I don't know how much either of them have played there, but it feels like one of them could handle that. Their shortstop's been underperforming, but I don't think Carlos Correa is getting benched anytime soon. So that's probably not a realistic spot for either of them. Buxton was moved out as a guy for precautionary reasons. He's been their DH, but I don't know. I saw a tweet from somebody saying, like, you know, if you're a fantasy player, prepare to be without Buxton for a while. Precautionary means nothing with him, right? Like, it's precautionary. His season's over. Like that. Like, it just, it feels like that's how it goes with him. So if that opens up a DH spot, like maybe that means that Julien gets a shot to play DH when Lewis is ready. Maybe Julien plays first base and Kirilloff moves to DH. Like, there are some moving parts here. I hope you mark down Kirilloff because I said that name too. But I think there are some moving parts here with this team. But even then, like, you make room for those guys, and then Polanco will be back. We haven't even mentioned Nick Gordon. He was starting to play a little better. Max Kepler is going to be back at some point. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And for that reason, as much as I like Julien, I'm still happy to have him in auto new leagues and deeper leagues like that. But in shallower leagues, I'm sort of hesitant to pick him up because I just don't know. I'm not counting on him getting much run, unfortunately. Short term, he'll probably be their everyday second baseman for like a week. And then who knows?
Yeah, that sounds about right. My concern with Julien, and I like him as well, are the strikeouts. They were somewhat of a problem in the minor leagues. I mean, he did have a season of 310 plate appearances at high A with a 29% strikeout rate. And in his limited sample, fair enough, 32 plate appearances, it was up over 30% with a walk rate of 3.1. And I think major league teams, like, I could see him kind of getting the Nolan Gorman 2022 treatment where, you know, okay, like, yeah, you're exciting, you're young, but if you're going to strike out over 30% of the time, we cannot have you on the field. And I think that could hurt Julien. Okay, so we get the entire Minnesota Twins lineup out of the way there. We are up to 16 names here so far. Continuing to churn through our list, we have an exciting return this week. Tyler Glasnow is set to make one more rehab start. He could return versus the Dodgers next week. If I recall, Chad, you were not as high on Glasnow as other people, but still interested. Where are you at with Tyler Glasnow? Are you interested in buying? If you have him, are you looking to see maybe like 2 or 3 starts and then sell him? What are we doing with Tyler Glasnow?
So yeah, you get that backwards, man. I was real high on Glasnow.
Okay.
I was very interested in him. I had him on a bunch of rosters. I've moved on in a couple places and otherwise been sort of stuck with him. I'm excited for his return. The results have been pretty good in the minors. He did have a setback during his minor league times. So like, you do worry about how long he'll stick around. But I also read, and I'm trying to find some sort of validation on this, because I heard secondhand that his velocity was pretty down today. And I can't find that. But he was... So now I almost feel bad saying this because I can't sort of, you know, validate that it's accurate, but he's usually like a 97, 98 mile per hour guy. And he was down at like 95 today, I heard, or 95, or whatever his last rehab start was. So something to watch with him, but I think he's probably like, he isn't just velocity, and he's the kind of guy who, like, it's entirely possible that he's trying to hold back from throwing 98 in order to keep his arm attached. And I could totally get that. And I think he could be very successful. And his minor league numbers, if that velocity report is accurate, then it would suggest that he is succeeding with a little bit less velocity. That's great. I love Glasnow. I'm super excited to see him back. He's a fun pitcher. He's so talented. But I think it's sad because I was one of these who was like, hey, if you get like 115, 120 innings out of him, he could be a top 10 pitcher, even with that. Almost like we talked about DeGrom. And now I feel like, am I going to get 70 innings out of him? 50? Like, what's realistic? And that's my big concern with him.
Yeah, and it's the Rays, right? I mean, they're going to be super, super conservative, naturally. The Minor League Baseball Twitter account, at MILB, did tweet out on May 16th, so 5 days ago. It was probably his last, it was definitely his last start, that at least for one pitch, he dialed it up to 99.4 miles an hour. Okay. So who knows what it was on average, right? We've seen pitchers, what comes to mind for me as a Red Sox fan is Chris Sale, who for one or two pitches, we'll see that like 98, and then it goes back down. Of course, recently, Chris Sale just looks locked in and has dialed it way back up. But hopefully that's not just one outlier pitch and the velocity really is back. And I did get down Chris Sale there. So we are up to 17, 18, 17. I haven't counted Nolan Gorman yet because we're going to get to him. Next up, Eloy Jimenez is apparently ahead of schedule. I thought the 4-6, I've never had an appendectomy, Chad, you know, knock on wood, Jesus. But but he, at that 4 to 6 weeks just seemed like a long time. And then I was like, well, it's Eloy Jimenez. So, you know, maybe it will just take him that long. He can return late next week, apparently. That was like, he got injured 12 days ago and they said 4 to 6 weeks. So I don't know what the heck is going on there. He was really starting to hit the ball well, but and we've talked about him, right? I mean, this is obviously a fluky situation or just something that people go through. This wasn't an injury or a nagging thing or anything like that. But still, it is a reminder, you know, here's your team without Eloy Jimenez. Here's how it looks. And this might happen more often than not. When he comes back, if he rattles off a week of, you know, a couple home runs, bat 400, you going to trade him? You going to be looking to move on from Eloy? Or are you going to be thinking, finally, this is why I drafted him?
I think I'm more likely to buy than to sell. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, right? Like, you've got him in, I don't remember, maybe it was in the Podcasters League. Well, you have him everywhere. But it's in the Podcasters League that we're talking about, like, you know, I would buy him if I could wait on him. And, like, I was thinking about doing that. And then it was when he got the appendectomy, right? Like, in the middle of us discussing me acquiring him. And I'm still there. I still think, like, as you said, this wasn't a, you know, this wasn't a pulled muscle. This wasn't him getting injured playing the field. This isn't some thing that you're like, oh God, this could happen any day. Like, he will never have an appendectomy again. It's done.
That's a good point.
And that's it. So I'm sort of like, this is actually like, it's obviously never good when a player misses time, but this isn't like Glasnow, who had that setback in his rehab at one point. This isn't like Buxton, who we talked about having precautionary issues right now. Like, this isn't a thing that you're like, oh God, this is a reminder that, you know, it is, as you said, it's a reminder of what your team looks like without Eloy, but it's not a reminder that he's injury prone and is going to miss a bunch of time. And that, like, this hamstring may never heal, which is always a thing you worry about. Like, this should be behind him once it's behind him. So I'm not too worried about this. If anything, I'm looking at it as an opportunity to maybe poke around with his current manager and be like, hey, do you really want to wait for him to get back? Wouldn't you rather trade him for a mediocre outfielder right now?
Yeah, that's a fair approach. It made me a little bit more upbeat because I've just been so disenchanted with him lately. But real quick, two outfielders who I guess you could say are both streaky, one being Eloy, the other being Teoscar Hernandez. If someone offered you their Teoscar for your Eloy, are you taking that offer or are you sticking with Eloy?
Wow. I think I'd rather have Eloy. I think given the choice between the two, and Teoscar is starting to pick it up. I mean, he's still having sort of a below average season, but if I remember correctly, I'm going to double check this right now.
It was same thing last year.
Yeah. And I was just saying, like, his May WRC plus is up to 114. Like, he's heating up as you'd expect him to. I don't think the ceiling is as high with him as it is with Eloy.
Yeah, that's fair. Eloy is a little bit younger too, if I recall correctly. And again, people forget Eloy was a really, really high prospect. He was Luis Robert without the speed before Luis Robert for Chicago. Moving on to a breakout this season, Nolan Gorman in May. And he's been great all year, but here are his stats in May. 57 plate appearances, only 11 strikeouts, which is huge for him. 7 walks, 12 runs, 7 home runs, 17 RBI, even a steal. He's batting 367. Is he a top 5 second baseman now? I think you could make a case that he could be top 3 if you're really buying into this breakout. And I think you could make the case that he's a top 50 player overall going forward. I am all in on the Nolan Gorman breakout. I'm trying to find a reason not to believe in this breakout, and I cannot find one.
Yeah, I think the fun thing for me with Gorman is he went through that stretch from mid-April to sort of the first week of May. I'm looking right now at April 18th through May 8th. There is absolutely no reason for me to have picked those dates. They're just random dates I pick, so don't read too much into them. But the point is, we had all this talk at the beginning of the season about like, oh, Gorman's breaking out. He's finally hitting blah, blah, blah. And then he fell apart. And for that three-week period, he had a 79 WRC plus, and things looked pretty bad. And there were a lot of like, oh, he's not, you know, maybe he's not really breaking out. And then, as you said, his May numbers have been great, but really it's since that May 9th date, he's got a 326 WRC plus. Now, for those who don't remember, WRC plus scaled to 100. 100 is average. 200 is double, as twice as good as average. 326 is God-level performance over, like, you know, it's over 10 days, 11 days. Like, it's not actually God-level performance, but whatever. Point being that I love seeing a young player, like, struggle and bounce back, right? Like, that's the thing you're looking for that more than a breakout. Like, a breakout is great. But the breakout where then, whether it's pitchers adjusting, whether it's dealing with a slump, whatever it is, where something goes wrong, and then that young player is like, no, that's not me. This is me. I'm legit. Like, I love seeing that. And so, I was sort of getting down on Gorman for a while there. I was slow to adapt before, and I was getting down on him. Then, you know, the things went bad, and I was like, I don't know. But now, boy, top five second baseman rest away. Let's pull up. I'm going to use the ESPN player rater. I like the Razzball player rater, so look at that. Razzball player rater.
He's got to be number two on ESPN, only behind Semien. I'm double checking that right now, but I'd be shocked if he was. Okay, no, he's number three because Estrada's two.
He is number two on Razzball. And so I'm looking at just, you know, here's the other guys sort of around him. You've got Semien is number one, Gorman, Max Muncy is third, Tyro Estrada fourth. Bunch of check marks for you here. Bunch of check marks. Nico Hoerner fifth, Jonathan India sixth. Then you get to like Taylor Walls. Ozzie Albies all the way down at eighth is sort of surprising. Looking further down the list, if I was saying who are going to be the top five rest of season, there's a name that's not on here at all because he just made his return to the bigs, and that's Altuve. Right? I would still take Altuve over Gorman. I would still take Semien over Gorman. I think Muncy versus Gorman is a very interesting debate. They're like, I feel like they're the same player, just a decade apart in age, something like that. And I might have a little bit more faith in Muncy than I do in Gorman. Estrada's a very different story. Yeah, I mean, Jazz is the other guy who you know, I guess it depends like when he's back, but he from the moment he comes back, I would take him over Gorman.
Mookie also has second base eligibility in some places. He does on ESPN.
Yeah. And then you're going to hear, like, I'm sure there's somebody out there who thinks Christopher Morel is going to maintain his, like, insane performance and be a top five guy.
We'll get to him.
But I think... You know, it's funny, when I saw you put the note of like top five rest of the season, I was like, no, that's ridiculous. And it's not. It's sort of a reasonable over under. I'm not sure I'm ready to say yes, he will be top five, but he's certainly in the mix there.
Yeah, he has just hit the ever living crap out of the ball. And the biggest thing, the first thing anybody should look at with a young player who had a 33% strikeout rate last season is what's his strikeout rate this season. And so far, it's not great, but it's 25%. And not even, it's 24.8% so far this season. That's with a 17% barrel rate. So he has been, to this point, the work that he has done has been otherworldly. And I'm looking forward to that continuing. His max EV this season is already 2 miles an hour higher than it was last year. Everything up across the board for a 23-year-old former top prospect. I'm all in on Nolan Gorman, despite Chad having just traded him away. So I was curious your thoughts on this deal. This is a keeper league. We keep three, though. So you got to be a really great bargain or just a flat-out stud to keep. I think that's important context. And I think people were a little... I'm curious to see what you think. people are a little miffed. I gave up a 22nd round Nolan Gorman, which to me is like a very prized possession. A 4th round Eloy, and this was after the news broke that he might return next week. And a 16th round Zach Eflin, and it was before Zach Eflin had another stellar outing with 16 swings and misses last night. And I got to add him to our tally here. There we go. And I received a 1st round Mike Trout and a 22nd round Anthony Desclafani. Did I lose this? Did I win this by a mile? What are your thoughts on this trade?
Man, it's an interesting trade. I think I'd rather be getting Gorman, Eloy, and Eflin.
Sure.
I think, like, looking at this long term, like, I think Gorman is the only clear keeper of that bunch. Eflin could play his way into that. I think Desclafani is the kind of guy who, like, by the end of the season, you're going to be like, oh, 22nd round, that's a pretty clear keeper value. But in a keep three,
yeah, no.
With his track record, I'm just like, I'd be hard pressed to believe he's one of your three best keepers. Whereas Eflin, I think, could make that leap. Probably not. Eloy in a 4th round is probably not that exciting a keeper. And so I think, and Trout as a 1st rounder won't be either. Like, he's going to be a mid to late 1st round pick. I don't think I would end up keeping him with a 1st rounder. And so Gorman becomes the one keeper this year. I mean, Trout is Trout. So I think from that perspective, as a win now deal, I get it, right? You've replaced Eflin's innings with someone who probably gets more innings rest of season. And then you've added Trout, and you don't have to worry about Eloy being hurt. You don't have to worry about regression from Gorman. Like, I get it, but I kind of like the other side better. Sorry, Pete.
No, I'm thrilled you said that. So here's some important context for why I did it in the first place, because otherwise I wouldn't have. There's no middle infield position. There's only one utility, and there's only one second base. I just got Altuve back, and I have Nico Horner. So I would probably honestly rather have Gorman than Horner. But the guy I was trading with said, I value Gorman more. I tried that, and he wanted Gorman, understandably. So that kind of put me in a little bit of a tough spot there. So it was, okay, maybe sell a little bit more than I should and get back.
Is this 5x5?
No, this is 7x7. So it's the standard 5x5 categories, but save holds and total bases we do. I'm trying to remember all the categories here. Strikeouts per 9 is also there. Quality starts. And I can't remember the extra hitting one. Walks. It's walks. So Trout, power hitters have a lot of value there. But yeah.
But some of that stuff also is like, you compare Gorman versus Horner, which obviously isn't directly part of the trade, but indirectly is, obviously. Like, you're getting a much, much better average out of Horner. Much, much better average out of Horner than you will out of Gorman. And he's going to steal you some bases that Gorman's not going to steal. And the power difference is, I think, in some ways mitigated by total bases, which seems kind of like a weird thing to say since Gorman will be better at total bases. But Horner's going to get you a lot of doubles, extra base hits, a lot of singles even. And those add up in a way that counteracts some of the home run advantage that Gorman has, right? In a traditional 5x5, I think it'd be, I don't know, I think you'd, Horner is a little, like, the power difference becomes a little bit more challenging for me, but I don't know. I get why you did it then. With Altuve coming back, I get why you did that. Gorman is, in that situation, Gorman is an obvious trade candidate for you, and, like, you should be looking for somewhere to move either him or Horner, and if it gets you Trout, it gets you Trout.
Yeah, fair enough. Another tiny piece of context there, just because this is a keeper league podcast. So here's a fun keeper rule. You guys have heard of this league before. If I do keep Yordan Alvarez and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as well, then Mike Trout will actually only cost me a third. So that played into it a little bit, although I think I'll still find somebody else to keep. All right. So that brings us up to 35 names are where we're at right now. We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into more names. Welcome back, everyone. Chad, I forgot to mention this. The reason why I was glad you said the other side won is somebody in the league made a comment. Now, I have won this league 4 times in 16 years, so it's not a crazy pace, but I think there's a little bit of sensitivity when I acquire Mike Trout. Somebody referred to it as, I got Mike Trout for a box of Dunkin' Donuts Munchkins, which I just thought was, an unfair characterization of this trade, so I'm very glad that you felt the opposite, and I hope that person listens to this podcast.
Maybe that person is just a huge fan of Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, that's true. They could be like, whoa, you paid so much to get Mike Trout.
A whole box of Dunkin' Donuts munchkins? That's just crazy.
Especially if they're all jelly. all right, let's keep clicking through this list here. Christopher Morel, you brought him up, and I did not tell him. I'm going to tell him now. Since getting called up on May 9th, he's Babe Ruth. 44 plate appearances, 14 runs, 7 home runs, 13 RBI, 1 stolen base. Actually, a little surprising, probably because every time the ball's in play, it goes over the fence, so he can't steal bases. He's batting .381. Now, the kicker is the strikeout rate is 36.4. So I don't think this will continue, but are you buying this second Christopher Morel breakout? Because if you recall correctly, he did the same thing, I think, last year to a lesser degree.
Yeah, I mean, this is like Christopher Morel. Like, to be clear, he is hitting the crap out of the ball right now. Like, this isn't just like, oh, he has a 50% home run per fly ball rate, and he's kind of earned it, which is just nuts, right?
Like, wild. Fine.
That said, like, this is just who he is. The guy swings as hard as he can at everything. And if he goes through a week or two where he makes contact, he's going to hit a dozen home runs over 2 weeks because that's what's going to happen. And then he's going to end up like he did last year with like a pretty meh season. And like, if you look at what he did last year, when he first came up, let me see if I can get this all accurate. He came up. So first of all, he came up May 17th last year, right? It's almost the exact same time of year, a little bit earlier in the season because the season started later, even though it's a few days later. But, and then through June 7th, he had through June 10th, he had a 156 WRC plus. He'd only hit 3 home runs, so the home run pace right now is like a whole other thing. And then from June 11th through the end of the season, which was, you know, most of the season, his WRC plus was 92, right? So basically what he did was for like almost a month, 3.5 weeks-ish, he was a very good, well above average hitter, and then he was below average the rest of the way. That's just, I think, who he is. And I think you can see it in his performance this year. He struck out already today while we're recording. That takes his strikeout rate on the season up to 37%. He's walked 4.3% of the time. He's running a 450 BABIP.
Like, not good.
Just, yeah. He's not a good hitter. He's just not a good hitter. And I enjoy the hot streak. Sell while you can.
Yeah, and what makes it tough is fantasy managers are so smart now, right? One of the first things we see, no matter what page we look at, be it Fangraphs, be it Statcast, is going to be that strikeout rate, and everybody's going to know that can fall apart in a heartbeat. But enjoy it, ride it out, and see how long Christopher Morel can carry your entire offense for. Manny Machado, to get into some unfortunate news, he had X-rays and they came back negative, but then upon a closer look, I don't know if it was MRI or what it was, there's a small fracture in his finger. That's a tough player, even though he hasn't been performing. That's a tough player to lose. So, Chad, how are you going about replacing Manny Machado in the leagues that you have him in?
So, this is where I mentioned this to you before we recorded, but this last week, my son is in fourth grade, and in Seattle Public Schools, they do a fourth grade camping trip. For some schools, do it fifth grade, but they do a camping trip, and I chaperoned it. And so, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I was at a YMCA camp, an hour and a half outside Seattle with like 75 fourth graders. And it was, I'm not super up on what's going on in the world of baseball right now. I'm still catching up. And so the answer of what I'm doing to replace Machado right now is like, I think Emmanuel Valdez is on that roster where I have Machado. And so he's in my lineups now because he was like the only other third base eligible player I had. And it's in our Keeper Cut Listener League for Otter New, where my team, I finally caught you, Pete. I finally caught you for last place in our Keeper Cut Listener League.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I went into this league thinking third base would be a strength because I had Machado. I had Jose Miranda, who I really like. And I had Christian Encarnacion Strand. I picked him up, I think, early in the season as sort of a up-and-coming option. CES has been great, right? Encarnacion Strand has been absolutely tearing up AAA. He just needs to get a shot. Miranda has been, like, he was terrible in the majors, and now he's in the minors, and he's been terrible there. So, yeah, I don't know. In terms of how I'm replacing him, though, like, in that league, I'm probably just going to live with Valdez until something else comes along because I'm not going anywhere in that league anyways. And so what I'm really stuck doing with him there is just waiting it out until he's healthy so I can trade him, which is just an awful spot to be in. If I were contending in that league and needed to go find a third baseman, I don't know. There aren't like a ton of options out there, I don't think. Like, so let's do this. I'm gonna do a quick search in Auto New for third baseman in the major leagues, sorted by points per game. And let's look for names that are not super rostered. So options I could pick up. Mark Vientos, 65.06% rostered. He isn't really playing a ton, it doesn't seem. It's unclear what his role is going to be. If I believe Vientos was playing regularly, I would love to pick him up to replace Machado. Jake Berger, 57.69% rostered. He probably should be more rostered than that. He's been really good, and he is playing, and I don't think he's going to get displaced anytime soon just based on the way he's performing. Casey Schmidt, 78.85% rostered. Another guy, if he's a free agent, he'd be a decent replacement. See, I'm just rattling off names here. I've just got a list of names. I can read every third baseman in the majors. We've talked a bit about Ezekiel Duran. He's still under 87% rostered, but not really sort of a guy I'm super excited about.
So a couple names there I'm definitely interested in. I was curious if you were going to mention Berger or not, because Berger was smoking the ball. And then I was like, oh man, the poor guy got hurt. It was perfect. Like, he was taking advantage of the missed time from Eloy, and it really looked like he was about to take off. He comes back from injury and hits a home run in three games straight. I mean, this dude is he's just a bat. So he's someone I'm definitely interested in. And the other one you mentioned there, Ezekiel Duran, I understand not being that high on him, but the underlying data so far has kind of supported what he's done. He's already up to 7 homers in 130 at-bats. He has 3 stolen bases, and he's batting .315. I just think that Rangers offense is good. He's an interesting target for me. I don't really expect the power to continue, but he could be a decent average stolen base guy with a little bit of pop. So those two names definitely stood out to me.
Yeah, and I think Berger, I mean, the big question with Berger for me is, once Eloy comes back, where does Berger fit in? Because Yoan Moncada has been good enough, and he's going to keep that job. I don't think Berger is going to displace him. So, like, does Berger take over at first base for Andrew Vaughn? I don't think so. If you're talking about the guy who maybe should get displaced, it's Andrew Benintendi.
They can't do that. They're not going to do that.
I wouldn't think so, right? They just signed him. They signed him to like a 5-year, $75 million contract. And, you know, the big question now is, will he hit more home runs or play more years with the White Sox? Because he has zero home runs. And I don't think, you know, he's going to get paid $15 million a year for like 3 home runs a year. Because he is just, and he's such a bad fit for that park. I think we talked about this in the offseason with Benintendi, but like, you've got a guy who sprays the ball around the park, who does not hit for power, and then you put him in a tiny park with no outfield space. And so you're playing to his weakness. I mean, it's just such a bad idea. Anyways, as a fan of another AL Central team, I am very appreciative of the White Sox.
All for it.
Yeah, just that was great. There was the other thing I saw. I thought was funny about the White Sox. So the White Sox are adding, who are they adding? They're adding someone. They're adding Clint Frazier. And someone made a comment that, like, they feel like the White Sox, like, memorized the 2016 top prospect list and are still making decisions based off that. And, like, oh, we got Frazier, we got Benintendi. Like, yeah. Anyways, I don't know who clears space for, really, it's who clears space for Eloy when Eloy comes back, because they are going to get him back in the lineup. And Berger is the DH and the obvious guy to replace, but, like, I just don't think you can bench him. So my fear is he settles into being a small side platoon guy, which I don't think is the best use for him. But yeah, if you need, he's certainly worth grabbing for now if you need a third baseman, but you do run the risk of him losing that job. If you want, I'm looking around, like, Jeimer Candelario has actually put up 4.9 points per game, which is not terrible, and he's rostered in under 20% of leagues. Like, that's a guy you could maybe pick up. Yeah.
It's not a pretty situation. It's not a pretty situation at third base. Jake Berger, by the way, max exit velocity is in the 100th percentile, 118.2. A lot of potential upside in that bat. If they give that job full time back to Moncada when Eloy comes back, I will be upset. I got Berger in a couple leagues. I got a lot riding there. We'll actually circle back to Jake Berger, but it was definitely a good name to bring up for that Manny Machado situation. Gary Sanchez, yes, he still exists. He's up with the Mets, even though it looked like Francisco Alvarez was coming around at the plate and really beginning to come into his own. What are our quick thoughts here on Sanchez up with the Mets and how this will impact Francisco Alvarez? Because I'm dejected.
I don't think it's going to impact him very much, to be honest. I think Sanchez is a bench bat and backup catcher. I think they just have him around. I don't know. He's making his first appearance today, literally as we speak. And that's really only because they have a doubleheader. Mm-hmm. And so both catcher, like, Alvarez will start the night game. Like, that's just how it's going to be. Sanchez is 1-for-2. He's also struck out, not a surprise. So, like, I don't know. Maybe something comes together and he starts to perform and they decide they have to find a way to keep him in the lineup. But, like, I don't think it's a significant impact on him. I think that Alvarez is their future. They know Alvarez is their future. They're going to keep giving him time. They have to carry two catchers, and Sanchez is, I guess, as good an option as any if you're going to carry someone else. Like,
ringing,
he was hitting in AAA. I mean, he was hitting really well in AAA in limited times. So, like, fine. He could get some time at DH there as well if they really feel like they need to work him in the lineup. But I'm not, if I'm rostering Alvarez, I'm not letting this bug me.
Sure. And for what it's worth, folks, if you're like, whoa, Gary Sanchez, there's a name, former 30 homer catcher. Even in the deepest of two catcher leagues, he's not a target for me. All right. So moving on from Sanchez and Alvarez, we have a really exciting return, especially for me being a resident Red Sox fan here. Big Maple is back. James Paxton, he's averaging over 96 mile an hour on his fastball. And he's looked good. He kind of stymied San Diego. He's had two, I think it was two shaky first innings, basically. But he's settled in to both outings and has looked pretty good. So if he's up for auction in one of your Otnew leagues, right? Let's say Otnew points. How much would you be willing to bid? He is up for auction in one of them. I don't think it's our Otnew points leagues. But what are we looking at for James Paxton? Are you like, yeah, right, I'll believe it when I see more than four starts? Or is this something to keep an eye on?
So I wrote about Paxton in my Otnew Hot Right Now 4 days ago. It was before his second start, I think. It was after the first. He was up for auction in 70 leagues. It was the most auctions currently going on for a player. And basically what I said in there, you go read it on Fangraphs if you want to see a little bit more detail, but basically what I said in there was like, he's really good when he's healthy. And I talked to her, like, when he first came up with Seattle, I went to one of his early starts, second start, third start, something like that, with a friend who's a Dodgers fan. And my Dodgers fan friend was like getting like Clayton Kershaw vibes from him, right? Sort of big lefty, big arm. And obviously, like, even at the time, he wasn't like, oh my God, that's who this guy, like, it was just like, oh, I could see some, like, getting the vibes, right? And like, the reality is being a poor man's Clayton Kershaw is a really good place to be. right. And Paxton still clearly has that talent. Like, it still exists. It is still in that arm. I'm perfectly happy to pick him up. And if I've got a lot of cap space, I'll spend a decent amount to do it. I think the thing you have to be cognizant of with him is, like, if you pick him up for like $7, which I think could be fine, in a few weeks, you're going to cut him because he's going to get hurt and his season's probably going to be over. And when you cut him, you're going to never get that cap space back because nobody else is going to pick him up. So I think that's the big question with him is, like, how much of a cap hit are you willing to sort of live with going forward when it comes time to cut him? Because I just can't see him getting over like 50 to 75 innings, right? And even that, I mean, he threw 150 innings, 150.2 innings in 2019. In 2020, he threw 20.1 innings. In 2021, he threw 1.1 innings. And then he threw zero last year. So, I mean, he's at 11 right now. He's like two starts away from pitching more this year than he did the three previous years combined. So you just have to be like, you've got to be realistic about how much you're going to get out of him. And I'm not buying that it's going to be 20 starts. It's going to be 5 to 10, maybe 15. And I also think
on that higher end.
I also think, by the way, I think that they will probably, like, he did get to 6 innings in his last start. He was 5 the start before that. Like, I suspect they're going to sort of baby his arm a bit, right? They're not going to want him to go out and throw 120 pitches or anything like that.
He did throw, and this was shocking, 107 pitches his last outing.
He did.
107. Wow. It was only 87 his first outing, but they're kind of letting him fly. Even Sale last night was up around 110 pitches. So I think Paxton is interesting. I'm going to ride him out while I have him. I don't think there's a lot of trade value at the moment. He'd have to really, really turn it on to get anything in a return. But, I mean, the skills are clearly there. The velocity, like I said, looks really good. I also think he's going to be a trade candidate. He's obviously not a part of the Red Sox long-term plans, and they've been good. I told people if the Red Sox stay reasonably healthy, they're going to surprise, and they have been pretty good. They're in the wild card hunt, but if they're realistic about where they are, I think Paxton could end up being someone who could get them a decent return as a rental piece. So I'd be curious to see where he ends up for his fantasy value, but I like Paxton.
If they're thinking that, like, if you're the Red Sox and you're thinking that, and if you're a fantasy manager and you have Paxton and you're thinking like, gee, I wonder what, you know, realistically, he's not part of my long-term plans. Act now, right? Because the problem is every pitch he throws, you run the risk of it being his last. So if you think like, hey, we might be able to get a reasonable prospect, I might be able to get a future piece, whatever, like, I wouldn't wait too long. Because, like, yes, every decent start builds up his value more, but I don't think it builds it up that much. I don't think there's anyone out there right now. Like, if he throws another 100 innings this year and there's still a month left in the season, I don't think anyone's going to be like, well, he's obviously healthy. He'll be totally fine the rest of the way. People are still going to be like, sure, but when's he going to break? And so I think if you're going to do it, like, act now.
That might be true. I think a lot of that would depend on the market. It would also just be, that would be a really hard sell for Red Sox fans, especially given the recent climate outside of the Devers extension. So although it is probably true to the logical fan, I can't see them doing that. All right, we are up to 52 names. So we got some work to do. We might do a little bit of rapid fire here. Jazz Chisholm, turf toe to the IL. He says he can beat his 4 to 6 week timeline. What's your concern level and how are you replacing him in all those leagues that you definitely don't have him in?
I just love that Jazz is like he can't help but be like flamboyantly competitive about everything. It's like, 4 to 6 weeks. No, I got that. I could beat that. Like, just like, okay.
Yeah, I just think he can play center field, right?
Right. It's like, I love watching him play. I love the way he like carries himself on the field and around the game. And like the fact that even extends to how he handles injuries is just, it's great. It's great. I'm not super concerned. I think my biggest concern is actually that he tries to come back too soon. And that turf toe strikes me as the kind of thing where like, it's a pain management thing. And so you're like, oh, if you feel like you can play, then you can play. But then he starts to try to play through the pain and he makes it worse. And like, I hope is like, I'm going to beat my 4 to 6 weeks is just him having some fun and a little bit of bluster. And that behind closed doors, he's saying like, I'm going to let this thing get right and make sure I come back and tear up the league the way I can. Cause that's what I'm hoping for. In the leagues where I do have him, because I do have him in a handful of leagues. I don't know nowhere.
That actually surprises me. He is tough to replace just in terms of the stolen bases, but I think a name that we mentioned earlier, so I will not tally him, and Manuel Valdez could be a decent replacement, although after his home run last night, I imagine he's going to be a tough guy to add in your deeper formats, and if you lost Jazz, you've probably replaced him by now.
Anyway. Well, remember, we talked a week or two ago about I was debating trading Logan Allen, Edwin Diaz and Brett Beatty for Jazz Chisholm and one of Raisel Iglesias or Carlos Estevez. Right. That trade was like six names. And so
yeah, I got to keep in mind the ones that we've already mentioned. That's all.
Yeah, fair enough. But I was thinking about that and then he got hurt. And so I ended up not making that trade, but like, I think I might come back to something like that as he gets closer to being healthy. The team that I was talking about with that, they're in last place. And if they start to like more aggressively sell, I might even see if there's like a, hey, I'll even buy Jazz now while he's hurt if the price is right kind of thing. Because I still think that when he's on the field, I think he'll produce.
He should. 14 stolen bases already. So there's always going to be that part of him as long as this turf toe does not linger. Adam Duvall, not to like just, you know, bring up the Red Sox here, but all the time. But Adam Duvall has started baseball activities. He could be back relatively soon, which is nice because when the injury happened, we all thought he was in trouble. I claimed him for $3 in one of our new leagues. I can't remember which one. I think it's actually the one where you and I are competing for last place. Are you interested in stashing Adam Duvall? I think the clock is ticking here on Tristan Cassis because when he does come back, I think Cassis is the odd man out. And that last piece there is a little bit unrelated, so we can get to that in just a second. But Adam Duvall, any interest in stashing?
Not really. I know he was playing so well before he went down, but I don't know. I don't really believe in him. I probably need to take a deeper look, right? I mean, I think that's the reality is that, like, I have leagues where I could use outfield help. I've been playing some sort of, like, you know, picking up guys like Edward Olivares and JJ Blade and like just trying to find production, and it's been hit or miss. But I don't know. I still just look at like what Duvall did last year and chunks of the year before. And like, is he really going to not strike? Like, is he going to really, he's at a 13.5% strikeout rate in his 37 plate appearances so far this year. We really think he's not going to strike out 30% the rest of the way like he did the last 2 years. And like, I could see picking him up, but I'd want it to be real, real cheap. Whereas like, I mean, maybe the clock is ticking on Cassis. If he gets sent down, I will go about trading for Tristan Cassis in every league I'm in while he's in the minors. Every single one. He is, like, his 25.7% strikeout rate isn't great, but it is not bad. He is walking 16.7% of the time. He is commanding the strike zone the way you want to see a young player do that. He has a 195 BABIP. His average exit velocity is over 91 miles per hour. His hard hit rate is over 42%. His barrel rate is 12%. He has a 357 xWOBA. Like, Tristan Cassis is doing it. He's doing all the things you want him to do except get the results. If we really think the clock is ticking on him, like, buy low. This is it. Buy low. This is the window. Do it. I didn't even realize that was a... Until you were like, the clock is ticking on Tristan Cassis, he might be the odd man out. I didn't even realize there might be a buy low window here. I am ready. I am diving in. I'm going to pick him up everywhere. Because, like, you know, if you ignore, like, if if you didn't tell me his batting average, his on-base percentage, his WOBA, and instead you just said, here's his strikeout rate, his walk rate, his hard hit rate, his barrel rate, his exit velocity, I'd be all in. All in on that. So I'm, yeah.
It's totally like fair. I'm not out on Cassis. As you know, he was someone I was heavily in on before the season started, and he's even been striking out a lot less lately. He hasn't struck out more than once in a game since at least May 3rd. I'd have to scroll further, and the game log doesn't go that far back that I'm looking at right now, but it's not the point. He's cut down on the strikeouts even in the month of May. He does have 3 home runs, so maybe he is showing a little bit of signs of life, but when you think about the Red Sox situation with the next player I wanted to mention, the Jaron Duran breakout, is it fair to call it that at this point? I don't know, but he has looked like a completely different hitter. We talked about him before the season, and I brought up a swing change that he made that basically gets his hands over the plate quicker. And whether it was that or just more experience or whatever it was, Jaron Duran has been absolutely on fire. And that makes a situation where, okay, you're not going to bench Yoshida. You now can't bench Duran. Or Duran, I should say. You've got Verdugo. So your outfield is almost set, right? And so then the move is, well, you've got Justin Turner at DH. Maybe you put him at first because you can't put him at third with Devers. And that means there's a spot for Duvall at DH, and he's going to take that over Cassis. So it's a weird situation. I just threw a lot of you there, mentioned a lot of names, so I got to tally all those extra ones down. But Jaron Duran, where are we at?
Duran, I'm sort of unsure what to make of, because there's some stuff that looks really good, but I can't get past the 434 BABIP. It's like I see that, sure, and I'm like, that is just nuts. But like with a 406 WOBA and a 434 BABIP, like the BABIP will correct. He should be a high BABIP guy, but not that high. And so even if it corrects, that's, I don't know, that's pretty good. He has, though, like he has very much cooled off in the last, let's say, 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just pull this up. Last 2 weeks, so dating back to May 6th, since I don't have today's numbers in here yet, he has a 90 WRC plus, 310 WOBA since May 6th. I think there's a good chance that that's more the kind of guy he is. In that stretch, he still has a 326 OBP, so he's getting a base at a decent rate, not like super high, but decent rate. But he's just not hitting for any power. He's got one home run and two doubles in that stretch. And so, like, you know, the ISO is just 122. And I kind of think that's what he's going to settle in as, is like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good comparison. Like, who's a reasonable comp for what I think Duran might be? It's like a poor man's Nico Hoerner. Someone we already talked about. I should have picked someone we hadn't already talked about. What was I thinking?
That's all right.
Poor man's Nico Hoerner. A rich man's Miles Straw. Right? Like,
I think he's going to have more power than those guys.
I think he might. So here's the thing. Miles Straw, when he's going well, he has no power. None. That's not Duran. But when Miles Straw is going well, he gets on base at a good clip. You're not counting on him for power. He plays very good defense and he runs the bases. I think Duran is that type of player, but with more power. But I don't know that it's, I mean, he's on pace this year for, like, if he played he's got 118 plate appearances, 3 home runs over the course of a full season, 600-ish plate appearances. That's basically a 15 home run pace. I think that's a little optimistic. I think he's closer to 10. Now he has potential for more. He could be 20, but I think he's closer to 10. But if he does, 10 home runs and 25 stolen bases, like, that's pretty useful. I guess I think at some level what I'm sort of getting at is, if you're the Red Sox and you're looking at your long-term future, I think the odd man out is Duvall. I think you should be shopping. Once he's back, you're either shopping him or you're shopping Turner or you're shopping both of them. Because I don't think sending Cassis down is good for him. I don't think you want to have, like, Duran, Yoshida, and Verdugo. Like,
they got to play.
That's your 2027 starting outfield, right? Like, you've got those guys locked in, and they should be there for a good long time. And that's a great place to be. Like, I just don't think you want to let Duvall get in the way of that. And I don't think you want to, I really wouldn't want to send Cassis down. Like I said, I think if I'm the Red Sox, I'm looking at what Cassis is doing and I'm telling him, like, don't stress about the results. Like, the results are going to be there. You're doing the right stuff. And I don't think sending him down is productive to sort of helping him advance and develop.
Well, we saw what that did to Jordan Walker. We saw what that did to Taj Bradley. So that is it's not a zero risk move to do that to a guy's confidence. All right, we're going to take one more break before we get to our final 35 names to go. And I even counted Babe Ruth, by the way, when I mentioned him in the same sentence.
He's a baseball player. Morrell,
which should maybe never happen. Yeah. So we will be right back. All right, folks, welcome back. Chad Young, Pete Ball, Keeper Cut Podcast, churning through our 100th episode here and our 100 names. We're through 65. And we talked about the Red Sox for some time there. So now it's time to get into the Guardians, of course. Tristan McKenzie is about to return, which is huge for so many of my keeper leagues and not new leagues. I had this guy and was so excited about it. And here it is, May 21st. He still has not made a start. I think Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen are safe for now. I think you'd agree to that. But you brought up some names in our discussion. Aaron Civale will be back soon. Cantillo, Gavin Williams. Like, break down for me the Guardians rotation and what the current situation is.
The Guardians rotation right now today is Bieber, Bibee, Logan Allen, Cal Quantrill, and it sounds like Hunter Gaddis is going to start on Monday, but I think it's just a spot start. There was some talk that, you know, maybe Gavin Williams could get that start. He's basically ready. And my comment on Gavin Williams at that point was, I just think they need a spot start on Monday because both McKenzie and Civale are close to returning. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a situation fast approaching where Bieber, Allen, Quantrill, Bibee, Civale, and McKenzie are all healthy. And the Guardians have never talked about, suggested they're going to a six-man rotation. And if they don't, then one of those guys is the odd man out. It's not going to be Shane Bieber. It's not going to be Tristan McKenzie. I don't think it'll be Cal Quantrill. He's been so reliable for them for the last couple of years. I don't think it'll be Civale, who has been better than I think people realize and who I think the team really values. So that means it's either Allen or Bibee, I think. And like Bibee, like I'm a big fan of Bibee. He pitched this afternoon against the Mets. 6 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs. That's not bad, but 4 walks and 3 strikeouts. That's the kind of start, especially for a guy who, like, control is supposed to be his calling card or one of his calling cards. He's got good pitch. He's got good stuff, right? He's supposed to be a good command and control guy, and he hasn't had that the way you'd like to see it. And it's sort of been a thing that's been coming and going for him. So, like, if I pull up his game log, he had no walks in his first start. He had no walks in his second. Then he walked 4 on May 8th. Then he walked none on May 14th. And now he's walked 4 again today. That, to me, is exactly the kind of thing where you tell a guy, like, let's just go back. You've been great. We've been super happy. Go spend a little time in AAA and, like, let's get you back to not walking guys the way that we know you can, the way that we know you're used to. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but, like, I do think they're going to have to find a way to make room for somebody, and that might be a way to do it. At some point, Williams will be ready, but, like, maybe someone gets hurt between now and then. But I kind of think, and you mentioned Joey Cantillo. We didn't even talk about, like, Peyton Battenfield. He's probably just depth at this point. He's hurt, but he's probably not coming up anytime soon. Zach Plesac is still in AAA. Like, he's still around.
He can stay there.
He can stay there. He probably will. But it's just, I don't know. It's a little bit of a messy situation. I kind of think they need to look for a trade. And I've raised some eyebrows by suggesting they should trade Shane Bieber. But I think you could get a great return for him. And I think you The Guardians have been very smart about getting out of some of their ace level pitchers before they stop being ace level pitchers. And I think Bieber kind of fits that mold. So, but it doesn't have to be him. I'm not anxious to trade him. I think like the reason to trade him is you might be able to get like a star level outfield bat in return, and they can really use that. But they're going to have to figure some stuff out. And I would be, as someone who rosters both Allen and Bybee in a number of places, I have Gavin Williams in a few places too. Like, I've got a little bit of concern that one or both of them get sent down at some point over the rest of the season, just to like work a couple things out, get, you know, take some easier outings, take some stress off the arm, maybe skip a start or two, but we'll see.
If that's all it is, then I'm actually not worried about it. But I do have concern that there's so much pitching there that it might not just be that. It might be like, hey, you're gonna finish the season out in AAA, and maybe we'll call you up for the playoff roster if we make it type deal. But we'll see. There is other Guardian news, but before we jump into the big debut today, can you really rank for me really quickly, I should say, Bybee, Matthew Liberatore, and Eury Pérez, these three somewhat recent call-ups. Bybee been up the longest of the three, who are exciting and definitely heavily rostered across our listeners' leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pérez is my favorite of the three.
Rest Bybee of season? Second. Or
yeah, even rest of season.
Okay.
I think he probably has the most upside of the three, sort of rest of season future. Like, he's got the most upside. For sure. And I think he is the most likely to stick, because I don't, like, the Marlins didn't call him up because they're like trying to keep themselves afloat. They called him up because they thought he was ready. Mm-hmm. And other than, I do think in head-to-head leagues, you run the risk of them being like, he's up for the rest of the season. His season ends August 17th or something like that. Right. Like, and then he's done and he, you know, goes home and enjoys the off season. So you do run some risk of that. He threw, was it 77 innings last year? He threw 78 the year before. So like, he's already thrown 40 this year.
Yeah.
But I think that he's the least likely of them to find himself back in the minors sometime soon. Whereas I think Bybee probably gets the most innings this year, but is the most likely to also spend a little bit of time in the minors, just because of everything going on around the Guardians that we just talked about. And Liberatore, I just don't like him as much as the other two. I think he's fine. He's been very good in the minors. His first major league start was better than what we saw from him last year, although he still walked a bunch of guys, right?
Right.
So, well, I mean, a bunch. He walked three guys, but it was only five innings. So that's a bunch. Yeah. But on the other hand, I suppose the thing I'm maybe not giving him enough credit for and putting him last, maybe it's not giving him credit, is that the Cardinals pitching, like right now, the Cardinals are listed with a 6-man rotation. Get ready to write some check marks. Flaherty, Jordan Montgomery, Adam Wainwright, Matthew Liberatore, Steven Matz, Miles Michaelis. There are a lot of guys there who could, you know, be left out of a rotation without being missed. And so I do think one advantage he has is, like, if he's pitching well, there's just nobody pressuring him for a spot, right? You look at the next guys, like the other starting pitchers they have on their 40 man are like Zach Thompson, Dakota Hudson, someone named Connor Thomas, who I'm not even familiar with. if I look at injured pitchers, Jake Woodford is their one sort of 15-day IL starting pitcher. If Liberatore gets sent down, it's because he sucks, right? That's what it comes down to. Whereas the others, there's other reasons they might miss time.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you need innings, it's Liberatore, but I think the other two definitely have more upside, especially Pérez. Not to knock Bybee, but Pérez is arguably the top pitching prospect in baseball. So, Chad, our last little piece of Guardian news here. Bo Naylor is up because of the doubleheader today. Is he worth picking up, or are you expecting this to be a short little stint?
So I was super excited because I love Naylor. And then they started Mike Zunino, who hasn't even been starting. They started him in the first game of the doubleheader. That game is going on right now. It's the eighth inning. In the eighth inning, they brought in Naylor as a pinch hitter, and he grounded out. He moved a runner up to third in doing it, so that's good, I guess.
Nice. All right.
But there was already a report. So Cam Gallagher, who's been starting recently, took a foul ball off his hand and may or may not be hurt. But they are expecting him to start the nightcap. If he can't go, Naylor will. But that's an emergency situation. But I think we called up Bo Naylor and we had a doubleheader, and he's going to pinch hit once in both games is all you need to know about where they think he is right now. And where they think he is right now is probably back in Columbus. And it's very frustrating because Gallagher is fine. He is a perfectly adequate backup catcher. I don't even think Zunino is that anymore. And I think they just need to move on. And it's extremely frustrating, but here we are. Meanwhile, like Naylor, if and when he comes up, like I still like him as much as like Logan Ohapi, who we've talked about. I like him for fantasy. I think he's much closer to Francisco Alvarez than people realize. Like there are very few young catchers out there that I like more than Naylor, particularly fantasy, because I think he can hit for decent average, he can steal you bases, and he can hit for power. Like that's a really nice combination. We talked about in the preseason that like his upside, and this is not, I think, a realistic upside. This is the guy I think he really could be, but like he comes in a similar mold as JT Realmuto, in a true five category contributor from a position where you often get zero categories.
Fair enough. Yeah, Naylor is a stash for me in at least one new format. So he's definitely a guy I'm excited about, but maybe not in the short term. Mickey Moniak is a name that I'm going to bring up very quickly. The other two names in that note, Ezekiel Duran and Jake Berger, we've kind of already broken down about their breakouts, whether we're believers or not. Chad's not so enthusiastic about Duran. He is about Berger. I like both of them. But there's another name we can tag on there, and that's the aforementioned Mickey Moniak, who it's 21 plate appearances. Like, let's not go too crazy here. He's looked awesome, and I wouldn't bring up a player with just 21 plate appearances who's been so bad if he wasn't a former first overall pick in the MLB draft. And it's not just 21 plate appearances. For what it's worth, at AAA, and granted it was the PCL, it's a hitter-friendly environment, he had a 940 OPS, 8 home runs in just 141 plate appearances. So this has been a strong year for Mickey Moniak to this point, be it in the majors or at AAA. How long are you going to wait before you consider adding Mickey Moniak?
In auto new leagues, I probably wouldn't wait very long because you can throw him at the end of your bench. And if this keeps going, then great, you've got him. And if it doesn't, you move on and it's fine. I would just note his average exit velocity is 88.6. That's not very good. His hard hit rate is 25%, and calling that not very good is generous. That's downright bad.
Do the strikeout rate.
This is a good. You know, I didn't even look at the strikeout rate because I was just looking.
Oh, it's good.
Oh my God. 38.1%. Yikes. That's not great. And I think the funny thing is you look at his XWOBA, and his XWOBA is 390, and you're like, oh, 390 XWOBA. Like, this is a really good example of where like XWOBA can lie, right? It's not predictive. And part of the reason it's not predictive is like little looping line drives that fall in are going to be hits, and they're going to be hits with high XWOBA because those things are hard to catch. I'm not saying that's what he's hitting, by the way. I'm just giving an example. But like a guy can have a 390 XWOBA without hitting the ball very well. He's just hitting the ball the right way. And that's not something that's sustainable. And so what is sustainable is regularly hitting the ball hard, regularly making contact. And he is doing neither of those things. So I'm not super excited. Yeah, I think I said I would in auto new league, I might pick him up quickly just to like see if this continues. I changed my mind. Someone else can have him.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a lot to get excited about. I think it was the first overall pick allure that, sucked me in there, but, yeah. And the Angels also, like, their starting lineup probably does not include Mickey Moniak. So I think that's important to keep in mind as well. He's a real deep league target. If a target at all. So we're almost there. We got 10 names to go, Chad, until we hit our 100 mark. And I wanted to make sure we talked about Joe Musgrove, who has just been terrible. Like the last thing you would expect from Joe Musgrove is to not even get quality starts. Well, we're five starts in to his season. Remember, he started the year in the IL. It's May 21st. Joe Musgrove hasn't given us a quality start yet. What he has given us is a 6.75 ERA and not great strikeouts per nine, which, to be fair, we probably weren't expecting a great K per nine with Joe Musgrove.
His strikeout per nine is up this year versus last year.
Okay, well, I'll take that.
Right.
But what
it was 9.38.
Oh, okay.
It's 9.38 this year. It's 9.15. Yeah. 9.15 last year, 9.38 this year. The issue for him has been walks. 3.38 walks per nine, an 8% walk rate. The last time he had a walk rate over, like, he's only once in his career had a walk rate over 7.2%. And that was back in 2020 with Pittsburgh when he had a 9.6% walk rate. That was in the short season. It was only eight starts for him. He actually pitched pretty well because he had a bunch of strikeouts that year. His strikeout rate was way up. Here's what I see. He started injured. Control is often one of the last things to come back. His velocity of 93.3, like, that's what his velocity was in 2021. It was actually lower than that in 2022. He's only once in his career had a velocity over that for the season. That was back in 2018. It's like, velocity is good. His issue is his walks and his ground ball rate is way down. It was 44.3% for his career. It's 36.5% this year. I am guessing that those things are related, the walk rate and the ground ball rate, because they're both about locating pitches. And control's often the last thing to come back for guys who are working their way back from injury. And I kind of want to buy low. I'm a little torn, but, like, you know, his last start yesterday, he gave up four runs on six hits in five innings. So the numbers don't look very good overall, but he struck out six in five innings. He only walked one. And so I'm kind of in on Musgrove, I think. He's been too consistently good for too long. He's only 30 years old. The things you worry about with a guy who's coming back from injury on velocity and stuff like that look fine. He's just got to find his spots again. But he's earlier in the season than everyone else, basically. So I think I'm in on Musgrove.
Yeah, it's important to keep in mind, again, there was no spring training here for Joe Musgrove. There wasn't. It was a quick rehab stint, and he was back in there for San Diego. So that is important context. I feel better about Musgrove after that conversation. We're going to skip around, Chad, on the notes, because a few of these names, at least those hitters, we've already talked about. Mark Vientos, Casey Schmidt was mentioned. And I want to jump to some true or false statements, a keeper cut. I guess this is now a trend. We've done this before. And let's start with Anthony Volpe. Anthony Volpe is the ninth shortstop on ESPN's Player Radar. Remember, ESPN's Player Radar does play up stolen bases quite a bit, which obviously helps Volpe, who's batting only .211. True or false, he finishes as a top 10 shortstop. And keep in mind, outside of the top 10 on ESPN's Player Radar right now includes names like Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Trey Turner.
I kind of think it's true, because I think he's getting better and developing. And so I think we're seeing his floor right now, because I'm sure he'll have some slumps and stuff along the way. But, like, I think we're kind of seeing him learn on the job, and I think he's going to get better as the season goes on.
Fair enough. All right. True or false. Mitch Keller is the third starting pitcher. I can't believe I'm saying this sentence. Mitch Keller's the third starting pitcher. I feel like I need to say that one more time. Mitch Keller is the third starting pitcher in ESPN 5x5 on their Player Radar. It's May 21st, and it's Mitch Keller.
He's second for Razzball. Second.
What the heck is going on? Is he going to finish as a top 10 starting pitcher? Or true or false, he finishes as a top 10 starting pitcher. Let me ask the question correctly, or statement.
Man. So this is an interesting one, because you're not asking rest of season, right? If it were like, will he be top 10 rest of the way? I think I would probably say no.
Right.
But he's banked a month and a half as a top three guy. So,
which will impact keeper decisions.
Yeah. I'm still going to say false. I think he goes through a cold stretch and ends up, like, in the 15th-ish range.
Me too. Yeah.
But, man,
he's been fun. He's been really good.
He has been. And I think my saying he's 15th is not like, oh, this is fake, he's not blah, blah, blah. Like, it's not that. he's been so inconsistent in his career, and we've seen flashes of this from him in his career, and I just don't believe he can maintain it. Right.
Yeah, that's
sometimes you're like, this guy's performed as the second best pitcher, but it's all smoke and mirrors and it's not legit. That's not the case. Keller's been legit. I just don't know that he can keep doing it.
Yeah. So I rely too heavily on this. It's a fantasy fault of mine because he's 27 years old. So it's almost useless to bring it up. But this is a player that came with quite a bit of prospect pedigree. The swinging strike rate is up, but it's up to 10%. So I do not think he's going to finish as a top 10 starting pitcher on the player radar. I would also say false. We do have one more, at least true or false question here. The number one relief pitcher on ESPN 5x5, this has to be the first time ever, is not a closer or a SPARP, a starting pitcher slash relief pitcher, aka really just this year, Spencer Strider. It's Yennier Cano of the Baltimore Orioles. So the question or the statement is true or false. He is the closer in Baltimore by the end of the season, not Felix Bautista.
So I'm looking at the Razzball player radar, as I mentioned a couple times, and Cano is third on that. So that's, he's not first. You know who is first?
Felix Bautista.
Felix Bautista. Yep. So I think the answer is false. He's not going to take over the closer. Now, they may find themselves in more of a timeshare. Like they may, and I think if, you know, especially if, I mean, it almost, it's sort of a weird thing to say. If the Orioles are either out of the running or locked into the running, they could find themselves in a situation where giving both of those guys more rest by like never having them, either one of them, pitch back-to-back days or something like that. Like they could make a decision like that to really keep those guys fresh. And that would result in them sharing the job, at least at some level. But no, I don't think he takes over as closer. I will also note that I am in 7 Otto New Leagues and I have him in 4 of those 7. I'm very proud of myself for that.
that's a
good pickup. All credit goes to Alex Fast, who like in his like in Cano's like second appearance, Fast tweeted out a GIF and said something like I'm really impressed with this guy. Right? It was something totally innocuous, but I was like, I'm in. I'm all in. I'm just picking him up everywhere.
I'm gonna give you the credit, Chad. Yeah, you were willing to listen to the tweet, so there we go. We have 2 names to get through, and then we will hit our 100 mark and call this a wrap. And because there's still so much stuff left in the notes, I'm going to let you pick, Chad, of any of those prompts.
Oh, no.
What do we want to tackle here? Because there's no shortage of options. One of them lists, okay. 2 of them list 10 names. So if we want to blow past the 100 mark, you could choose.
No, we got to land on 100. We got to hit 100 exactly.
I'm gonna make you
answer a true or false. You ready?
Sure.
It's one of the ones you put on here, so I'm sure you have thoughts on it. But true or false, Michael Harris, second, due for some major positive regression. Let's go a step further. Michael Harris is a top 10 outfielder rest of the way.
Oh. So I'm
because he was being drafted around there. Maybe that's too high. Maybe I should say top 15, because he was being drafted as like top 10, top 15 outfielder. So I'm trying to say, I'm getting at like, he returns his draft value the rest of the season, even though he clearly hasn't yet.
Okay. I'm going to treat that as 2 different questions, because you and I actually had a really good conversation in our outfield rankings where they were basically the same, other than you had Michael Harris and I had Luis Robert, who has had a weird season.
Okay, so you won that one. You've definitely won that one so far.
So far. I mean, it's only May 21st, and honestly, if you look at the underlying stuff, like Luis Robert started the... Oh my God, I'm doing it again. Luis Robert.
There you go.
Luis Robert started the season super hot, then got super cold, and then he got really, really hot again. So the numbers are kind of weird. But Michael Harris, the reason why we put it in there is like all the underlying stuff suggests that he's better than he was last year, right? He's had a lot of pop-ups, which is odd. And I think that's something that'll kind of iron itself out as the season progresses, because everything else looks good. We wanted him to cut the K rate. He did it. We wanted him to increase the walk rate. He did it. He's still barreling the ball basically just as much as he did last season. And there's been absolutely no BABIP luck, right? His BABIP is 203. That's just not going to stick, especially for a guy who puits the ball on the ground as much as he does. He's quick. He hits the ball reasonably hard and like puts the ball on the ground. So he should have a high BABIP. However, with all of that said, I'm going to say false, because I'm not going to go against what I said earlier. I'm going to stick with Luis Robert being better than him going forward. But your other question, will he return draft value? I think from this point forward, he will. If we look at his season-ending stats, I don't know if it's going to look that way, but he's due for some major positive regression.
Yeah, and I was very specific to say from this point forward, because he will not end of year look like a good draft value. But sure. From a keeper league perspective, if he from this point forward looks like a good draft value, he'll be a real interesting target for me in the offseason. Like, he already strikes me as the kind of guy that I'm going to look at in like November or December and be like, man, I wonder if his manager is like, I thought he was going to be a top 20 outfielder. He was really a top 40 outfielder, and be willing to trade him based on keeper value. No, while he actually was top 20 for like the second half of the season. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking at with him. All right. We need one more name, right?
Well, if you count Luis Robert, then no.
We talked about Robert earlier, though. You talked about him with Eloy.
Oh, okay. Then I doubled him up. So yes, we need one more name.
Yeah. So let's see. One more name. Who are we going to end with here? This is okay. This is not the single most exciting name left on the list, but it's a guy that I've got in a couple places and I'm debating what to do with him, including in our podcaster on a new league. Jorge Mateo was absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. He is no longer doing that. Is he a drop? True or false? We got to do true or false, right? True or false, Jorge Mateo is a cut.
Oh, that's such a tough question. I'm not going to give the typical it depends. I'm just going to give you a straight up answer. And that answer is yes. And there's two reasons why. Three reasons why. Number one, the track record just isn't there. Right. I got excited about Eno Saris of The Athletic's article that we referenced weeks ago, over a month ago, suggesting that maybe he is a legitimate breakout. Obviously, things have taken a turn for the worse since then. And the track record does not back up what he did before. Instead, the track record backs up what he's doing right now. Number two, it's just such a deep position. Shortstop is so deep that like I can't rationalize holding on to Mateo, especially since it looks like reason number three, his power really isn't legit. So that makes him a stolen base guy. And stolen bases, as we said last week, are up all over the place. I'm not having a hard time finding stolen bases. So I don't need to roster guys going to strike out a ton and ultimately kill my batting average and give me no other categories. And reason number four, the Orioles have a lot of options. If he continues to struggle, I mean, we were talking about Gunnar Henderson losing time. Jorge Mateo could easily lose time as well.
Yeah. Yeah. In that podcaster league where I have him, like my middle infield, I've got Altuve, I've got Horner, I've got Muncy, I've got Julien, who's now back up. I've got Dansby Swanson. Like I've
way
got
over 100.
No, we mentioned most of those guys before.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Almost all those guys. I
stopped writing the names. I couldn't keep up, so I just started putting little slash marks.
Yeah. No, I think we've covered those guys. And I have Tyro Estrada, who we've also named before.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm pretty deep in middle infield. And on top of that, if I go to the standings page, last I checked, yeah, I have four more stolen bases than anyone else in the league has right now. And I could, like, I've got 61 steals in that league. The fourth place team, which is you, has 50. I could probably stay ahead of you without keeping Mateo.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I need to put him. I'm going to do it right now. Trade block. Oh, he's already on the trade block. Nobody's inquired. All right. Maybe I'll cut him. We'll have to see. But, I was so down on him before the season because I didn't think he'd have a job. And then he got a job and I was like, all right, I guess I'll pick him up. At least he'll get me steals. And then I was like, oh, wow. I like stumbled into this star. It's already over.
Yeah.
It's already over.
Jorge That's Mateo, it. We hit 100. Breaking hearts. Yeah, we hit 100 names. It took us an hour, 28 minutes. Who knows? Maybe it's an hour 27 after the editing, but we did it. Well done, Chad. Folks, thanks again. 100 episodes of Keeper Cut. How exciting. You could tune into us next Wednesday, where we will be back. Please follow Chad at Chad Young. You can follow me at Pete B Baseball. You can follow the show at Keep or Cut. We will see you in a week.